You're listening to the Body Confidence Podcast, where every week you'll hear new perspectives, stories, and advice about how to like your looks, overcome comparison, and feel at peace with the body you're in today. Hey, I want to welcome you to episode 26 of the Body Confidence Podcast. My name is Rebecca Biggie, and today we have a guest back on the show. It's been a while since I've had some guests here, but I'm really excited to welcome Alexis. She is a psychologist, and she lives in New York City, and she actually specializes in something called the anti-diet plan, which I loved. I found her on Instagram and immediately was like, yes, this is like everything that I believe in as far as our food and things that we choose to believe about our diets. So I want to welcome you, Alexis. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, I was so excited because you actually do talk about body image as well as this relates to diets. So can you give me from your perspective what you do, who you help, and kind of what your world is like?
Sure. So my name's Dr. Alexis Connison. I'm a clinical psychologist and I work here in New York City, and I specialize in working with people with different types of overeating issues. And body image, I think, is really entrenched in the way that we relate to food and the way that we relate to our body. So we can't talk about changing our relationship with food without also talking about changing our relationship with ourselves and our bodies. So I work with people both one-on-one, doing kind of what you might think of as more traditional individual psychotherapy, but I also developed a 9-week mindfulness-based program called the Anti-Diet Plan, which is a group program that I run in person here in New York to help people get off the diet overeating roller coaster and get back into their bodies, start to actually hear what our bodies are telling us, listen, honor the wisdom that our bodies are sending us, and just try to step out of this conflict, this misery that we found ourselves in with our relationship with food and the way that we feel about our bodies.
I love that. I think it's you're just spot on when you say we can't talk about our relationship with food unless we talk about our relationship with our body. I think when people want to lose weight or people want to diet, the reason why is always like more telling than kind of their weight goals.
Exactly. And, you know, I think that we infuse so much in our culture with weight loss. So we think that if we lose weight, it's going to, you know, not just put us in a smaller body, but it's going to change our whole lives. We'll be healthier. We'll have, you know, a better job. We'll be happier. We'll have better relationships. I mean, it's just we put so much onto weight loss that's not about, you know, weight loss at all. And the good news is that because it's not about weight loss, it's about, you know, how we feel about our bodies. All of those things are attainable right now without changing a single thing about your size.
Right. Right. Do you, how often do you encounter people like truly not believing that it's possible for them to feel a certain way before they change the way they look?
Oh, every day.
Every day. Yeah. I was going to say, because I think that's just like an assumption that we have that it's like, well, I can't be happy if my thighs still look this way or something.
Yeah, every day. I mean, I think that I hear it not only in my office, where I hear it every day, but I hear it just, you know, I think when you start to do this work and you start to kind of, I would say it's like taking the red pill in the matrix, like all of a sudden your eyes are open to this whole other world and this whole other way of looking at things. And once mm-hmm. you've made that switch, you hear diet culture everywhere. So, you know, and it's like, you can't turn it off. So I'm sitting in the coffee shop and you hear, you know, the women next to me talking about how bad they are that they're sharing this cookie and how it's gonna, you know, they're gonna do paleo starting tomorrow or whatever, you know? So it's just like, it's in the air that we breathe. It's just so immersed in our culture, this fat hatred, feeling that we would be better if we lost weight, really tying our self-worth up with our body size.
Absolutely. And I think the main thing that you had mentioned there was they felt they were so bad. We tie this like morality to food and to exercise, and you know, certain foods are bad and certain activities are good. And if you eat a certain food, you feel like you're bad. Mm-hmm. And that is when you realize you get to choose, and I'll let you go into what your anti-diet plan is all about,
sure.
But you get to choose if you believe something is bad or something is good. And I believe if you balance it, you know, no food in and of itself is bad or good.
Right. I completely agree. I mean, I think that it's all just this completely subjective, thing that we've like made up in our culture, that some foods are good, some foods are bad. And then of course there's all of the emotional baggage that gets attached to those foods. Mm-hmm. And what foods do most people feel most out of control with? It's whatever they've decided are the foods that are off limits, the foods that are bad, the foods, you know, that are more, you know, those foods then of course become more enticing, more alluring, because mm-hmm. we always want what we're not supposed to have. Yep. And, you know, it just becomes this whole crazy cycle. When in my work, I have the privilege of talking to so many different women, some men too, but mostly women, who, and I hear about what the different, you know, rules are, or, you know, and it's amazing that it like varies. Like, we all have our own ideas of what are good foods and what are bad foods, and they are not based on any kind of objective reality other than what we've created in our mind. And, you know, the nutrition information that we get from the, you know, nutrition experts, the people who are supposed to tell us what to eat, because of course we've become so lost that we have no idea how to feed ourselves. So we turn to these experts on TV or on the internet to tell us what to eat. That information changes every other week, mm-hmm. you know? So it's just all completely subjective. And the, you know, way to understand what foods are good or bad in any kind of a sense is by listening to your body, right? So if your mm-hmm. body can't tolerate certain foods, then those foods don't work well for you. But, you know, it's all, we have that wisdom within, and it's definitely not about like, you know, being good if you're eating gluten-free and bad if you have a donut.
Yeah. That's so true, because, and I think the reason why so much of this information is not only inconsistent, but contradictory as well, is because it's so specific for different people. For example, I have a high dairy intolerance that I didn't realize I had until I had really bad acne in high school, and I just couldn't figure out what was going on. And eventually someone mentioned like, maybe it's dairy. And mm-hmm. I was like, what? What are you even talking about? How could what I eat affect my skin? Like, that doesn't make sense. And like, I'm not eating like greasy fast foods. Like, I'm trying to be healthy. And they're like, yeah, dairy can trigger, you know, that reaction in your skin. I cut out dairy, and I mean, my skin isn't perfect, but it's 10 times better than it used to be. And there are some diets that promote, you know, eating dairy and cutting out carbs and things. And I can't do that. If I followed that diet, it would not be good for me.
But, you know, our bodies are all completely unique. So mm-hmm. listening to some, you know, expert on TV or on the internet, like, is going to tell you very little about what your own body needs.
Right.
So, you know, if you have a dairy intolerance, then that's the wisdom of your body telling you that that's a food that doesn't agree with you. Now, you know, I will say that I don't believe that means that food is now off limits. You make choices around how you want to feel, you know. Mm-hmm. So some people have, for example, like lactose intolerance, and they may say, you know, I am tuning into my body. I feel crappy when I eat dairy. And there might be a time, you know, so you take that into consideration when you're making choices around food. So it doesn't mean that like I can never have dairy again. And if I ever eat dairy, that's because I'm out of control and I'm a bad person. And, mm-hmm. you know, your next time you have dairy, you know, you're going to have like the whole pint of ice cream because it feels really out of control. But we can make choices around, okay, you know, I'm really in the mood for ice cream. I know it's going to upset my stomach. Is it worth it in this moment? Right? Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not, depending on what you might have going on later on in the day or whatever. But like, we have the freedom to make those choices. I think that whenever we try to make these, you know, really kind of rigid eating rules for ourselves, it's bound to backfire.
I totally agree. And that's kind of what I ended up doing. I totally cut it out for like a couple months because I was like, well, let's see if this is really what's going on. And then I noticed my skin improve and I was like, well, you know, I love dairy. Mm-hmm. I like ice cream. I like cheese. Like I like all of those things. So what can I do to limit the amount of dairy I have, but still be able to, you know, not have this restrictive, like I cannot eat this or whatever. Mm-hmm. So like, I just made some choices. Like you said, it's about still having power and control over what you're doing, mm-hmm. but keeping in mind that, hey, this isn't really good for me. This isn't, just doesn't sit well with my body. So, mm-hmm. you know, I replaced regular milk with almond milk. Mm-hmm. I don't really have yogurt or cheese by itself, but I'll have it, you know, if it's on a salad or on a burger, I'll have cheese, or if it's in pasta, you know, like if it's, I won't have it as a main meal or a snack, mm-hmm. but I'll have it now and then, and it's been fine. But then mm-hmm. also, you know, my fiance will be like, oh, do you want to go get ice cream? And I'll go, but I won't get anything, or I'll have a bite of his. And it's like, you know, I enjoy having this and I want to, but I don't need it. Like, I don't think that's, you know, something that's going to make or break it right now for me. And I think because I allow myself to have it now and then, it's not like you said, craving this thing that I know is going to upset my body and my system. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't crave it as much because I have it now and then, and I feel like I'm in control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think it's all about, you know, finding what works for you. And many people do find that once we're attuned with how our body reacts to certain foods, if there's certain foods that just don't agree with us, you know, over time, they often do become less appealing just because, you know, we associate like not feeling well
right.
with those foods.
Hey, I hope you don't mind me interrupting you for just a brief second. I wanted to talk to you about a totally free resource that I created called Thoughts That Uplift. This body confidence guide is a Mad Libs style affirmation template that you can use to create thoughts that uplift you from the negative self-doubt and senses of low self-worth. So if you're struggling to think positively about your body and about your worth as a woman, head on over to RebeccaBiggie.com/uplift to download your totally free body confidence guide. Again, it's called Thoughts That Uplift, and it's a guide that will help you train your thoughts to go from a place of negativity and negative body image to positive body confidence. All right, thank you so much, and let's get back to this amazing episode. So can you tell me a little more about the anti-diet plan and kind of how it started, why you chose that phrasing? I love it. I think that's genius. I'm like, oh my gosh, yes, that's exactly what we need.
Yeah.
So tell me a little more about that.
Sure. So I started the anti-diet plan, you know, a number of years ago. It wasn't called that. I just called it kind of more generically mindful eating when I first started. But, you know, the reason that I was drawn to the group format was that I found that I was, you know, kind of repeating myself a lot with clients, that there seemed to be some really universal themes that were emerging again and again, and tools that people kind of needed to change their relationship with food. So I thought, wouldn't it be great if I could kind of get everyone together, mm-hmm. people could talk to other women who are also struggling with the same thing and learn these skills in this kind of more supportive environment, because I think that we really do need support, because you leave, you know, the anti-diet plan group and you go back out into this diet culture, weight phobic, you know, world. Mm-hmm. So support plays a big element. But the anti-diet plan is really founded on mindfulness meditation. So I believe that is a key tool to changing our relationship really with ourselves. It gives us the power to start to sit with ourselves and to familiarize ourselves with our body and what our body's telling us, and to be present with our eating and with our body. So through the kind of foundation of mindfulness meditation, and what comes with mindfulness meditation is also an emphasis on self-compassion and self-acceptance. Mm-hmm. So through those pillars, we kind of start to hone in more to what our body is actually telling us. So listening to our internal signs of hunger, fullness, what kinds of foods we enjoy, how our body reacts to certain foods, how to choose what to eat, how to deal with times that we want to eat but we're not physically hungry, so emotional eating. And really, you know, spending a lot of time working, unlearning what we learned in diet culture. And that's why I called it the anti-diet plan, because, you know, mindful eating, I think, is one element of it, but we can't change our relationship with food and with our body and get, you know, stop dieting until we're able to start understanding why diet culture is so destructive, to start to believe that weight loss is not the answer to everything, mm-hmm. to work towards self-acceptance and being kinder to ourselves and caring for ourselves right now.
Yeah. And did you post your post on Instagram? I'm always like, oh my gosh, yes.
Thank you.
I think something that you posted was like, no matter what diet you're on, it's always like restrictive. Is that something that you posted recently?
Yeah, that sounds familiar. I mean, I do. I think I hear so many people say, well, I'm not dieting, I'm just doing Weight Watchers, or I'm not dieting, I'm just, you know, eating healthy. If we're restricting what we're eating, if we're categorizing foods into good foods, bad foods, foods that we should eat, that we shouldn't eat, things that are off limits, it's a diet.
Yeah.
And I think that diet, you know, we're in a very confusing time right now, because the body positivity and the kind of anti-diet movement is really taking steam. And I think it's being noticed more by mainstream culture. So, the diet industry is saying, oh crap, we have a problem. People like don't want to hear about, you know, how to lose 10 pounds in 10 days by cutting out carbs. I mean, there's still, don't get me wrong, a huge market for that. But I think people are kind of catching on to like dieting actually doesn't work. We go on so many diets, we may lose a few pounds, we gain it back, we go up and down, and it's just like a miserable cycle. So unfortunately, I think a lot of the diet industry is starting to co-opt the language of mindful eating and of, you know, kind of the non-diet movement, and convincing people that, you know, for example, like Weight Watchers isn't really a diet plan anymore. Now they're mindful eating. Like, sorry, no, they're a diet plan. They are not mindful eating. That's not what mindful eating is about.
Yeah. I just loved that, because when you're thinking of food in terms of good and bad, and I'm on this diet, so these are my rules, like you are restricting yourself, and you're almost setting yourself up for that scenario where you're being tempted. And if you would have just had balance and mindfulness all along, mm-hmm. you're not tempted anymore. And you don't feel like controlled by your food. You feel in control of your food. And I thought that was such a simple way to illustrate this concept.
Exactly. I mean, I love to say that, like, I always hear about people talking about being on the bandwagon and then falling off the bandwagon. And I believe if there's no bandwagon, there's nothing to fall off of.
Yes, yes.
So we just need to get rid of the whole bandwagon. Like, the whole structure needs to be rethought. It's not about, you know, so many people think, so many of the clients that I see and the people that I meet kind of talk about, well, you know, I did this diet plan and really did work. And then I said, well, what happened? Like, why are you here in my office if it was so successful? And they said, well, you know, it was just, I couldn't stick to it. I didn't have the motivation. I'm lazy. And we blame ourselves for the fact that these plans don't work, which is like, you know, on the part of the diet industry, marketing genius. I mean, that's like one of the greatest marketing ploys of all time, but doesn't work out so good for ourselves, because we stay stuck in this belief that it's about just like finding the right diet and that the problem is us. Yeah. But, you know, we're not the problem. The whole system of dieting is inherently flawed. Like, the most, you know, the most likely outcome is that you will stay on the diet for a short period of time and then feel out of control with your eating and then blame yourself and then think that the answer is to go on another diet plan. So we need to start to kind of expand our notion of dieting, that diet is that cycle. It's not just the part where you stay on the plan, but it's the part where you feel out of control as well.
Yeah. And I think that the belief that in order to get what we want, which, I mean, yes, we want to maybe look a certain way, but more so we want to feel a certain way and we want to believe certain things about ourselves. And the diet culture is telling us, oh, well, in order to get that, here, do this, you know, 6-week program, and then you will have happiness. Then you will have, then you will be attractive. Then you'll be beautiful. And I think that the main root of all of this is that body image, that we don't believe we're beautiful or attractive or worthy until we have those results. So in your work especially, what advice would you give to a woman who is stuck in this diet culture because she believes that, you know, she can't have that acceptance until she sees those results?
Yeah. So I think what you said is so powerful, and it's the way that the diet industry, you know, gets its hooks into us, because, you know, it plays on this myth that we're not good enough as we are right now. And it's a myth that girls have been taught from such a young age, I mean, like kids, girls, especially girls, preschool girls. I just read a statistic, over half of all preschool girls worry about being too fat. I mean, it breaks my heart. So, you know, we're indoctrinated as girls and women to believe that we're not good enough. And I think that the shift really starts with seeing the bigger picture, seeing that this is a story that we've been told. This is not the truth. This is not reality. This is a story that we've been told, that there's something wrong with us, that we're not good enough, that we need to fix ourselves to become some ideal that our culture tells us we have to be. And that's all BS. And I think that when we can see that, like, this is something we've been indoctrinated into, and that it's our culture that's broken, it's not us, it's a problem with our culture, we can start to shift the way that we see ourselves. Now, you know, I will say that it's very hard to go from a place of, you know, it's obviously not so simple to just go from a place of being kind of immersed in self-hatred to saying, oh, I discovered body positivity, now I'm going to feel great about myself.
Right.
Like, that's a journey that you go on. It's a hard journey. And, you know, like a lot of my clients seek out therapy to help with that journey. There's, you know, different kinds of supports, but it's a process. And I think it starts with self-compassion is the number one thing that we can do, you know, trying to just be a little bit kinder to ourselves, is the most, you know, I think that's one of the most transformative things that we can do to change how we feel about our body. And forget about body positivity. Just start to kind of observe, you know, the thoughts that are going on in your mind, starting to observe the harsh, you know, like I call it our inner mean girl, like the harsh inner critic that exists in our mind, starting to observe that, noticing it, and okay, there's that voice. It's not reality. It's just a thought that I'm having. I can shift my focus away from it. So that would be kind of my starting point. But self-compassion, I think, is the number one tool that we have.
Yeah. And realizing that, and like the way that you phrased it was so great, because you said observing your thoughts, not saying, oh, not getting even more down on yourself because you're thinking negatively about your body or about your worth. Like, those are just thoughts that you're having. And if you can choose to think negatively about yourself, that means that maybe there's a chance that you can choose to think positively about yourself. And I think awareness is a huge part of it, because if you realize, wow, I'm telling myself the whole day how terrible I am. Like, of course I feel like crap about my body because I keep telling myself these things. And to notice that in a non-judgmental way and kind of look at yourself from a standpoint of like, so like what I try to do is look at myself as if I were a friend of mine. So if a friend of mine was saying these things about herself, what would I say to her? And like, you can be your own friend. Like, you can think about yourself and the way that you're talking about yourself, like, as an outside perspective, kind of, if you can look at it objectively. And it's hard to do when you're in that space, and that's why you need the support and things like that. But just coming at it from a perspective, not of, oh, I've failed because I'm thinking this way, but like just sitting with that for a while and saying, okay, this is kind of where I'm at. Now, what should I do going forward? Like, because we also assign morality to our thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that there are like good and bad thoughts. I think that all of our thoughts are there to show us something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think like something I just really want to highlight from what you said is that it's not about pushing the thoughts away and it's not about judging the thoughts. And this is something that I think mindfulness can be really helpful with, the process of just observing non-judgmentally what is. You know, the thoughts are just there. And, you know, I think it's kind of about observing them, accepting them, and then, you know, from recognizing what's going on, we can move forward in a way that says, oh, you know, I'm struggling right now. I'm having a hard time. How can I take care of myself the best way possible? You know, rather than falling into, oh, what's wrong with you? Why are you, you're not supposed to be thinking those things. You're supposed to be thinking positive thoughts. Like, you know, we can get really lost in that narrative and, you know, compassion gets lost along with it. So, you know, I often, similarly to what you recommend in terms of like approaching yourself as you would approach a friend, I often encourage people to, you know, even think about themselves as they would think of a child who's suffering.
Yeah.
And, you know, like if a child is having a hard day or going through, you know, difficulty and they're saying, oh, I'm just, you know, I'm such a loser. I can't believe I did that. Like, could we ever imagine saying the things that we say to ourselves to a child? Like, we would never say like, yeah, you really are a loser. Why did you mess that one up?
You know, right.
Like, no, I mean, we'd be like arrested for child abuse.
Right.
We naturally have compassion. Many of us naturally have compassion for children. And we say, oh, I'm sorry. That sounds like such a horrible experience. What can we do to, you know, comfort you, to help you feel better? And I think that so many of us, so many of the women that I work with, you know, for whatever reasons, you know, just, we don't always get what we need, in our own childhood, but we can be our, you know, our own good enough mothers. You know, we can learn to kind of internalize what we needed and give that to ourselves now as adults.
Mm-hmm. So, oh my gosh, this has been so amazing. Like, so many of your answers, I was just like over here nodding my head, like, yes, 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 this is amazing.
Thank you so much. Well, it was so great talking to you. I'm really glad that you had me on.
Yeah. So how can someone find you or get in contact with you if they're curious to know more?
So if you're interested in learning more about the anti-diet plan, I do offer a free 30-day introductory course. So that's by email. You'll receive 4 emails that will teach you kind of all the basics of my program. And you can sign up for that on my website, which is drconason.com. You can also sign up for my newsletter, and I write a blog for Psychology Today that you can find at Eating Mindfully on Psychology Today. I'm also on social media, Instagram at The Anti-Diet Plan, Twitter at Connison Psy D, and Facebook is Alexis Connison Psy D.
Wonderful. And I'll have all of that. Yeah, I'll have all of that linked in the notes below. So if you want to check her out, it's amazing. I follow her Instagram and I love it.
Yeah. And I think, again, it's really important to fill our feeds with kind of, you know, get the diet culture out of your social media and start to fill it with, you know, anti-diet, body positivity, the messages that we really need to be more inundated with. And I'll also say, if anybody is in New York City, I do offer live in-person the anti-diet plan workshops. They're 9-week workshops. They run throughout the year. And if you're on my newsletter, you'll get notified about them.
Thanks so much for listening to the Body Confidence Podcast, my friend. You know I put so much time and effort into putting out the best content I can for you on here. And the best way for you to show me some love if you enjoyed this episode is to head over to the homepage of this podcast on iTunes. Scroll down to where you see some purple stars and tap how many stars you want to give
this show. The more ratings we have, the more people we reach, and the more lives we can change. Let's get the word out and spread body confidence together, okay?